gold level's tripled since then, and the stocks have really not participated to a large degree in that gold rally. You know, we're finally seeing the, I mentioned 4 or 5 months ago, the previous time we're starting to see the stars align. And now really starting to see them line up beautifully here. We're starting to see the gold making new highs. The gold's been making new highs for a year and a half, right? So it's not new news, but it's obviously very positive in the sector. But the key for me, Andy, was the large cap GDX, so the large mega cap gold stocks making new 15-year highs. So the big caps breaking out, that puts pressure on larger fundamentals to own the stocks. It captures the attention of the larger pools of capital in the space, driven by what I've talked about many times, record margins, like the ASIC margin. You know, we're talking about $1,500 to $2,000 margin per ounce on the average, you know, large cap producer right now. That's phenomenal. I was thinking about last night, Andy, the gold price was $2,000 an ounce a couple of years ago, and now their margins are approaching, in some cases, $2,000 an ounce.
Michael Gentile, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Good to see you again, Andy.
It's really good to see you. And you know what? Let's start out with this. I first met you in Atlanta. You gave actually a great presentation for a company that we'd like to talk about later on. But I was just very impressed just really with your, it was your presentation going through the sound curve, what you like and what you don't. But you are taking some of your companies through Europe. Let's give me the cliff notes on that for all of our European, we have many, all of our European listeners and viewers. What cities are you going to be at?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Europe for the first time in a long time, actually. I went by 6 years ago, actually. So it's kind of heavily restricted my travel schedule with a big family. But as I get older, able to get back on the road more often. So I'll be in Europe October 6th to 10th. The five, so London, Paris, Geneva, Zurich, and Frankfurt, each subsequent day. I'm taking 6 of my largest investments with me on the road. So I'll be on the road with North Isle, Copper and Gold, NCX, Radisson Mining, RDS, Nord Superior, SCP sticker there, Group 11, NG, Capitan Silver, CAPT, and Astra Exploration, ASTR. So the 6 companies I'm on the road with. I have about 25 companies in my portfolio, so the ones I'm not bringing with me doesn't mean I don't like them as much, but we had to choose. And those are companies I'm either an insider of or a very, very large shareholder of. So I figured that was a good template. The idea of the tour is really to introduce to investors in Europe myself personally. I like meeting people face to face. So it's a lot of start. I really appreciate that. And also introducing my investment style. I take a bit of a venture capitalist approach, which I explained to you when I presented it live to Andy about how I construct my portfolio, how I allocate capital, what kind of stories I like to get behind, what are the attributes of companies I like to invest in. And I figured a great way to explain how I like to invest is bring 6 of my, you know, successful investments with me that really fit the prototype of what I looked for in junior mining. I think it's going to be an amazing use of time for investors. We're going to do a, you know, 2.5 hour lunch. You hear 6 companies present, you hear me give my thesis on mining and sector and my approach to allocating capital. And then there's one-on-ones before and after as well. So I'm just trying to make a little mini conference. I'm a portfolio manager, right? 25 years. I love events where it's efficient use of time. I get a lot of value for my time and could pack a lot of value into a short window of my allocation of my time. So pretty excited about that. And market's picking up. Definitely we're seeing more interest in precious metals. So it'll be hopefully a good turnout and a value add for those best that do come.
Got it. Oh, I'll put all of this in the show notes here on both the YouTube as well as the Spotify and Apple podcasts. And Michael, if you have any links or anything where people can contact you or just sign up for that, please send those to me and I'll make sure I include all those so you can get a great turnout.
Absolutely.
I love your approach and I don't mean to embarrass you, but I tried to model my approach very similar to yours, and that's using really a private equity, as you just mentioned, approach to it. But let pin that thought for a second, because I really want to take a deeper dive into that. But first here, let's talk about the markets, gold, the mining stocks specifically, well, a lot of commodities, but I want to talk about mining stocks. They've really broken out in the last 9 months, I should say. And it looks like they're getting another run here towards the end of the year. Is this the really start of this, what we've been waiting for? Really, I think, have structured our portfolios over the last couple of years. Do you think this is the start of it? Or, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm laughing at that in my office this morning, and it was this thing. I felt like Noah building his ark, 7 years ago, waiting for the rain to fall, because I've been pounding the table for gold since 1350, and only got involved, started investing in gold levels tripled since then, and the stocks have really not participated to a large degree in that gold rally. We're finally seeing the, I mentioned 4 or 5 months ago, I started to see the stars align. And now really starting to see them line up beautifully here. We're starting to see the gold making new highs. The gold's making new highs for a year and a half, right? So it's not new news, but it's obviously very positive and sector. But the key for me, Andy, was the large cap GDX, so the large mega cap gold stocks making new 15-year highs. So the big caps breaking out, that puts pressure on larger fundamentals to own the stocks. It captures the attention of the larger pools of capital in the space, driven by what I've talked about many times, record margins, like the ASIC margin. We're talking about $1,500 to $2,000 margin per ounce on the average, large cap producer right now. That's phenomenal. I was thinking about last night, Andy, the gold price was $2,000 an ounce a couple of years ago, and now their margins are approaching, in some cases, $2,000 an ounce. So that is filtering through to profitability, free cash flow, balance sheet deleveraging, buybacks, and finally filtering into the stock price appreciation. We're seeing the mid-cap producers, there's no large cap guys start to move down cap into the mid-cap names. Mid-cap names have done really, really well as a bit of a catch-up treat. You're starting to see silver, break up to 52-week highs. That's always a proxy for me, retail speculative interest for the sector. And you're finally seeing that filter into the junior resource stocks. I've been a lot of my time in kind of the sub 100 million market cap Wild West of mine. Those names are finally starting to work last kind of 5-6 weeks. Preceded from that was pick up in volume, starting to trade better, not materially moving higher. Now you're seeing price, follow the volume. So all the stars are aligning really nice. But I still think we're quite early in this cycle. I don't see this as mainstream. I'm not talking Uber drivers, talking about owning mining stocks. The mainstream portfolio managers are not overweight stock. We talk about the stats I've read, in terms of percentage ownership of gold and portfolio. It's still very muted and very, very low. This is being driven by central banks reallocating their reserve assets to gold away from U.S. treasuries and U.S. dollar. That's what's been really driving the rally. And we're starting to see the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, let's say, the first inklings of more mainstream interest and more, generalist money coming back to the sector, retail money coming back to the sector. So I think we're quite early. And on a valuation basis, the stocks remain extremely attractive, extremely cheap. So I'm very excited to see where we're staying, waiting this for a long time. But I think we're just getting started. You can have pullbacks. We'll have pullbacks along the way. We'll have some sell-offs, some shakeouts, but I still think we're quite early. I've been positioning myself for years for this and waiting for this, and we're excited to see the tide start to turn.
You and me both, I've been waiting for it. And I think you're absolutely right. There's nothing I disagree with you in saying that. I've talked to hundreds of CEOs of companies, whether a small cap company, junior exploration, or whether they're a large cap over the last couple of years. The producers, and I look at it, they should be moving first or should have moved first. They're just printing so much money. You mentioned margins and at this level of gold. And you don't see the gold run over either, correct? You just see these margins only increasing as we have higher gold prices and potentially much higher gold prices. And then also the cost of energy hasn't really caught up to the price of gold, if you would. So yeah, there's a lot of margin in there.
That's the good margin. If you look at the last time gold ran into COVID, you had a hyperinflationary environment where costs were reaping faster than gold was. You had oil prices going, went to zero, then went to $100 the barrel. So you had massive pressure on the cost side of things. You had a very tight labor market as well. So you had a kind of trifecta of cost pressure that was subduing a lot of the margin expansion. You're right on it. The gold prices exploded higher. Labor costs are relatively muted. The commodity input costs are relatively low, right? We're not in a hyperinflation environment anymore. So that means the margins are much more sustainable than they were. We're going to see cost pressure in more in an inflationary environment. The devaluation of the dollar, which is driving gold, is going to affect labor costs and other costs. But we're seeing the gold price increases dramatically outpace the cost increases we're seeing in the industry, which is translating to real margin expansion, real free cash. I mean, you see it in Nuon's quarterly, in Nico's quarter, they're piling up the cash on the balance sheets. They're delevering massively. They're doing stock buybacks. So that is showing you how healthy this industry is. And that's a very, very, very good thing. When the big boys are healthy, then the rest of the industry will benefit from that health. The valuation of the overall sector should dramatically improve.
Got it. So before I get to your methodology, talk a little about when is the time to sell? Because over the past couple of years, I was anxious in taking profits here, whether that was 50% or 100%, if you would. I don't regret doing that by any means. But yet I hold on to a lot of these guys for 5, 10, even 20 plus baggers, if you would. But some of the issue is again, it's a wall of worry on myself, if you would. I've seen these stocks move and I'm like, should I take profit or not? What's your methodology in taking profit?
It's a great point. 90% investing Warren Buffett says it's a psychological battle. And what's your emotional intelligence, you know, in terms of being able to stay calm through different cycles of investment. So if you've been involved in the sector for 5, 6, 7 years, I was looking at a stock yesterday, a Big Ridge Gold that I own. And, you know, I've made my original investment in the company at 15 cents when gold was $1,500. And the stock went from 15 to 35, all the way down to 5 cents.
Yeah.
And they've done a fantastic job through the downturn. They've gone to 50% ownership to 100% ownership of the asset, consolidated the asset, like really, really value creative transaction at the bottom. And the stock hit 18 cents yesterday. And so I'm looking back when my initial investment was at 15 cents. I bought all the way through and all the way down and, you know, averaged down into the stock. But I'm like, the stock is 3 cents higher than what it was when gold was 1500. Now gold is 3500. But if you live to that 5, 6 year desert, you're like, oh, wow, I'm back to my cost. Or, oh, the stock is 200%. Wow, it's up a lot. I should sell. But in reality, you know, it's 10 times more valuable today than it was when I bought it at 15 cents. Literally, gold price is up much higher than all worth the asset. You got to, so when I look at selling is every stock I own, I call a script, evaluation framework. I have a 3 to 10 year window. If I'm right about the commodity and I'm right about the business, I'm right about the execution of this asset and they deliver what I think they can do, the stock could be worth $2, making up a number. And so I'm constantly updating that thesis. And if they're executing to that thesis, what I'm doing is checking my current stock price versus what my theoretical fair value of the stock is. That's when I decide to sell, not based on emotion, not based on the roller coaster, how much I'm up or down this month or this year. It's really predicated on fundamental value. And obviously along the way, you're updating your commodity prices options, right? So when gold is $1,500, I had a very constructive view that gold could go significantly higher. But I couldn't tell you with precision that gold could be $3,500 in, you know, in 2025. But that'll update and tilt it through your evaluation, your model as well. So everything I do is very, you know, sober, emotion free, and trying to really juxtapose where the stock is versus the fair value in the stock. Also, because my capital is limited, I try to keep my portfolio 25, 30 names versus other opportunities that are available to me in the market. So where is VMware trading? Where is, you know, B2 Gold trading? Where is K92 Lining trading? Where is, you know, Big Ridge Gold trading? Where is a different set of stocks in different places? Understand if these companies are successful, they're going to grow into the larger company potentials. And where are those companies trading? Am I better off owning a producer versus developer? Better off owning a developer versus a pure resource stage company? Better off owning a resource stage company versus a pure explorer? Different points of the cycle, there's different value in different parts of the Lassonde curve. And so that's where you're constantly comparing. But again, the key is having a fundamental view. That allows you not to get shaken out of the pocket when things get a bit rocky. And actually allows you the conviction to double or triple my position like I did at Big Ridge Gold when it was at 5 cents and 10 cents, because I was like, this story has gotten better and the stock is cheaper. Mm-hmm. Gold price is up. It's a better value. Not stock is down, I hate it. Stock is up, I love it. That's a typical kind of a retail approach to investing. And that's how a lot of people get hurt investing because they're driven by their emotions.
Yeah, well said. And I've caught myself in that emotional cycle way too often. So very well said. Let's get into your methodology. And I don't mean to, I just want to say this with humility. I met you in Atlanta and I just loved your presentation. And I love just the way how you view things and how you worked your portfolio and finding value and investments. And you wove into the Lassonde curve in that you buy all over the Lassonde curve. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it depends on where they're at, what, again, determined by value if they're in the middle and if they're coming out of the Lassonde curve into production. But I just want to talk to me about that. And I love how you view it as a private equity investor. And I think most investors need to take that approach.
Yeah. So first of all, majority, when I got heavily involved, went all in on gold in kind of 2015 and 2018 full time. My view was you have to take a portfolio approach to investing. And my view was, if I think gold is going to go up a lot, which it has, my subsequent conclusion was, where's the most torque? So if I have a strongly held macro thesis, which is gold is going much higher, where will I benefit the most financially from allocating within the opportunities available to me in the gold sector? And I, you know, rightly or wrongly until recently, but rightly now, I think is I picked the junior resource space, like the sub 50 million, even sub 30 million micro cap resource exploration story. Because in a true bull market for gold, those are the stocks that have by far the most leverage to the gold price. But conversely, they are also by far the most risky investments. So what I said is like, I want to take a systematic approach to allocating capital to a space that's going to have a huge cycle ahead of it. I can't own two exploration or resource names because one will be up 10,000% and one will be go to zero. But if I've had bad, multiple go to zero. So if I have bad luck and I pick two and they both go to zero, I've lost all my money. So my approach was 25 to 30 names, take my available capital when net worth, and I would allocate 1% of my net worth to an initial investment at a time. And my target was like a private equity or more like a venture capital fund, I would say. Venture capital funds, call me the better analogy. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for 20, 30, 50 times my money in initial investment. So my criteria, and come to the European Roadshow, we do a longer form interview later, but my criteria had a checklist of things that I'm looking for. But my first criteria is, if I'm right, does this stock have the potential to go up 20, 30, 50 times? Because that's the kind of return I'm looking for. My time horizon is 3 to 10 years. So I'm not looking to trade an asset or a deal result or a cyclical blip. I'm looking for companies that have that true potential. So very focused on valuation and very focused on the criteria of these companies that have the attributes to become potentially a mine one day. You know, it's very, very early. The checklist of things that I look for, well, management, geological, infrastructure, all different things that tell me this has a shot. Because if it does have a shot to become a mine, and it does become a mine, those stocks that go up 50, 100 times your money, especially if you buy them at the right point in the cycle, which I also focus on. And so those winners are going to pay for most of the mistake that even a professional like myself will make. Because if you take 25 darts and throw 25 darts at the TSX Venture Mining Stock Board, and you throw 25 random companies, the odds of you finding a miner are probably less than 1 in 25. You could probably find 25 baits on that. So what I'm trying to do is out of 25 companies, if I can bat 20% or 30% and find 5, 6, 7 that go all the way, those 50 to 100 extra returns are going to pay for all the ones that don't work out. All those other stocks could go to zero, and I'm still going to have a way better return than I would have had owning Newmont or Barrick or Agnico. But you have to be systematic. You have to have a capital allocation approach, and you have to have a tolerance for risk, understanding that you have prepared that some of them will not work out. And we'll end up going to zero, being, you know, -80, -90% investments. But that's what venture capital does. When you have a venture capital tech portfolio, you hear about Google, you hear about Netflix and Amazon, Facebook. You don't hear about the hundreds of other venture capital investments that they funded that end up going to zero. It's the winners that make those VC funds earn 20, 30, 40% a year. And it's also the backdrop. We happen to be in a backdrop where tech is really, really hot sector and the market valuations are rising. That is also very beneficial for a venture capital fund when you try to exit these investments. Well, the same thing. I look at where are we in the cycle? Buy when pessimism is high, buy when nobody cares. I've been buying nonstop for 6, 7 years because pessimism has been that long in the sector. But the fundamentals are improving. You have a rising tide, and eventually that rising tide is going to lift all boats and lift your valuations of the whole group. So you pick your stocks well, you pick your commodity cycle well, you pick your timing well, and you should have a pretty impressive return over time. But it requires discipline, and it requires a very cool-headed approach to investing. These are very volatile stocks. Most people can't keep their head with the volatility in the space.
Yeah, no, everything you said, you're really preaching the gospel. If I could just talk to my viewers and listeners here, what Michael just said, just re-listen to it and re-listen to it and really take notes on that. Also, what I got from you is you really want to go wide. You mentioned you want 1% of your capital. So you're really managing your risk very well with not getting over invested in one or two companies. I might add, I have a portfolio of about 20 stocks. I love them all, but yet I don't love them because I think the investors, a lot of time, they'll fall in love with the story or fall in love with the CEO. I'm friends with a lot of these guys, but I try to divorce that. Are you executing where maybe you are executing, but you know, things go bad. And you mentioned you're only probably going to win if you're lucky 20, I don't want to say lucky, but if things work out 20% of your investment. So a lot of these investments won't work out, but you're significantly going to make a lot. Those winners are going to significantly make up the difference with all of those losers, correct?
Yeah, let's say when I say win, I mean, if you bought 25 GE Robotics stocks on January 1st of this year, you're probably up on 25 out of 25. So I don't mind if you were thinking, well, I'm way smarter than this guy. So my 25 babes are all up. We slowly say five. When I buy 15, 20% of a company, Andy, I'm not selling that stock for 5 to 10 years. So how I win is different than how a trader would. And so you can trade these stocks as much as you want. But my win is I buy a stock at a $10 million market cap and it gets sold for $1 billion.
Right.
8 years in it, 8 years now to a major mining company. That's my liquidity event, like a venture capital fund. Venture capital fund, you own all of Amazon or Facebook or consortium of buyers owning the startup. And your exit is what someone else buys it from. So my approach is different than, yeah, if you pick your timing, you just want to trade stocks around and everything is up this year. Everything's up this year. Great. But I'm talking about true win, liquidity win, like, you know, generational type wins. Right. So that's what I'm looking for. And I'm talking over multiple years. So yeah, it's not about how am I doing this week, this month, 6 months, a year. It's a longer term horizon. And I track my portfolio from, you know, 2018, when I went really all in the space, my own capital. Like that's the number I care about over 6, 7, 10 years directionally. Where is my capital going? Not so much about the month to month, mark to mark. Exciting as this rally event doesn't really change my day to day. I'm really focused on the long term.
Yeah, got it. Okay. So let's talk about some stocks here specifically here. And to all my viewers and listeners, this is what people want, but this is for educational purposes only. Just start redoing your own due diligence, please. Just what Michael talked about previously in this conversation. And if I am an investor, I will fully disclose that. So talk about a few stocks and why you like them and why you got it.
Well, I mentioned the six companies that are going to Europe for 5 days. So clearly, those are my, I call larger, you know, institutional quality names that are really kind of crossing the Rubicon of projects that are, you know, emerging into, you know, venture capital successful, let's say, projects that are likely to be, you know, built or potentially acquired in the next cycle, instead of a cycle that we're in. So those are the larger ones. I mentioned them earlier. For your viewers' benefit, again, 25 deep, right? So if we're talking about 3 or 4 names, like I still think you should have a diversified portfolio of these names.
Yeah.
But I was thinking for your viewers, Andy, like names that have not really rallied as much. So maybe have lagged a bit that I still think have significant upside potential and are worthy of some due diligence on the part of your viewers. Astra Exploration, ESTR is the name that came to Atlanta with and met you there, Andy, and very high, ultra high grade silver and gold story. It's about a $40 million market cap, about 60-70% owned by top 15 shareholders. A lot of very, very supportive, clean cap table, no warrants. Their last drilling they did a couple of months ago, they had an 8,000 gram per ton silver hit and they had an 80 gram gold hit. So this is very high grade, shallow in one of the most prolific areas of Argentina, which is really improving under Milei in terms of economic improvement and providing agenda. So Astra's one that I think is quite interesting. And they're going to start drilling again in 3 weeks. Stock's kind of a bit of a lull because they drilled in winter in Argentina, rain is coming in, now they're back drilling. So there's a bit of a lack of news flow, but we're going to be back drilling fully funded phase two program in a couple of weeks. And that'll sort of big reignite interest in the stock. Two stories of news flow that I like.
Real quick about Astra, just to all my viewers and listeners, I've had Brian, the CEO, on the program a couple of times. I am an investor, full disclosure on that. And I also, they're in my portfolio and I do like them as well. Go ahead.
And then two Newfoundland names. I mentioned Big Ridge Gold, I was talking about earlier. They got 1.6 million ounces in Newfoundland. What I like it, they've gone from 50% ownership to 100% ownership of the project in the last 2 years. My manager at junior mining companies was buy versus drill, which was when the market caps were very, very depressed. And your market cap's $10, $15 million. Don't go raise $5 million to drill a hole the market's not going to care about. And you're going to massively delete your share structure. I told companies, if you're hurting, other companies around you are probably hurting even more. Other assets you can buy for 5 cents on the dollar because the industry started with capital raising to either grow your footprint in an existing base or increase the ownership of an existing asset. They've done a phenomenal job going from 50% ownership to 100% ownership, consolidated from one of their key partners on the project. The project's very advanced, got about 1.5, 1.6 million ounces, including 1 million ounces of 2 grams in an open pit in Canada. It's a very, very good grade for open pit in Canada. Metallurgy is basically all done. The previous owner had almost put out a PEA back in 2015 when they owned it. The metallurgy is basically done. Drilling is very advanced. They're about to commission a PEA on this project. It is going to really surprise people as to how valuable this is. And they love the land's jurisdiction. They're very pro business, very pro mining. There's a pathway for Big Ridge in a kind of toll lining scenario where they could be permitted in 12 to 18 months, which in Canada is unheard of speed of timeline. So they follow the boxes, only had about a 40, 45 million Canadian market cap. Has been, like I said, it was almost the price it was what gold was $1,500 5 years ago. So that's fun to look at. Another one's Canterra Minerals, also in Newfoundland, one of my favorite jurisdictions. It's a pro mining jurisdiction, tier one Canadian jurisdiction. Canterra's got about 25 million tons of copper equivalent resource at 2%. The big VMS area. They own all the extensional land right next to Equinox's Ballantyne mine. So they're a great landholder in there. They have Equinox over here and they've got Firefly, which is a success story to the north. They own all the land in between. They already have 46 million tons, 30 million market cap. They've done an amazing job. Again, buy versus build. They consolidate the whole camp of VMS deposits all around them. Painstaking work, have pieced together for the first time common ownership of all these assets. And they've put out a press release this week about their geophysical target and potential offset in this deposit. The other one that has not rallied, they raised some flow through money when the market was tough. They're chewing through a lot of those shares right now. Once that shares are cleaned up, I think the stock is well positioned for success. And then finally, for American Pacific Mining, USGD, two high grade assets, one in Alaska, one in Madison. It's called the Madison asset in Montana. Very high grade copper, silver, 100% of that. But they own 30%, 50% of the assets. A couple of years ago, during the downturn, were able to acquire 100% of both assets, including 15, 16 million ton VMS deposit in Alaska, and some really high grade copper, silver potential with a deep porphyry target in Madison. $40 million market cap. Stock is 70% off its highs when portions of the assets. I want 100% of the asset. They're well funded. Team is very shareholder friendly, does a lot of communication and talks very well to investors. So I think it's a great opportunity here. I think they're under some pressures well from the previous buyers and they did some weak hands in the stock. I think they clean up those shares and there could be a really good runway for American Pacific as well.
Excellent. Let's talk again about your roadshow here, but man, can we get you back down to Atlanta? I got people asking for you. Dr. Wood, he knew that I was going to be talking to you. He says, he asked Michael to come back down to Atlanta.
I'm hoping to do more tours like that in the near future. So I really, really enjoyed our time in Atlanta. Really, really savvy group of investors. I was quite impressed. Backed up the gold market wasn't as vibrant as it is today. And there was a lot of really good questions, a lot of interest in the party there. So I really, really enjoyed my time. Hopefully back soon.
Got it. Okay. Mention again, the cities you're going to in London, you're going to, I haven't written down here, but go. Yeah.
October 6th, London, October 7th, Paris, October 8th, Geneva, October 9th, Zurich, and October 10th, Frankfurt. And so we'll put the invitation in the show notes there. It's, you gotta send an email in and get pre-approved to attend. There's no cost. If you're approved to attend, you're qualified, serious mining investor looking for retail high net worth guys that are seriously involved in the space. Very much looking forward to that. And then I'll be actually in New Jersey for the American audience on November 8th. I'll be speaking with Peter Gravich at a charity event we're doing together. So if you want to hear from me on this side of the pond, we can do that November 8th, Saturday, New Jersey. And I'm working on an event in Vancouver during Roundup as well, much of my company's proud. And so hopefully get a chance to meet a lot of your viewers in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, fantastic. Michael, there's really, I guess you're just going to send me the link to see you on the road. But that being said, there's no other way to reach out to you, maybe on LinkedIn. Can I post your LinkedIn profile in the show notes as well?
Sure, if you want to. I keep pretty low. I'll let you
do
the high profile social media. And then people hear my view on YouTube when they Google my name. That's my way to get touch with it.
Got it. All right. Michael, you're very gracious. I want to thank you so much for your time. I love spending time with you when you're here in Atlanta. Just really happy that you are on the show again.
I think my pleasure.
Take care.